Hello, welcome back to Mood Swings. We've had a bit of a break recently, that was sort of unplanned. Unfortunately, I ran out of episodes, and then I went through a bit of a rough patch where I really didn't have any spare time, and any spare time I did have, I was needing just to chill out and try and take some time to reevaluate everything that was going on. And sort of sort myself out a little bit. Had a little, how to put it, mental health episode, I guess, that came out of nowhere, and then thought it was all good and all gravy, and it went away, and then came out of nowhere again. And so hopefully now things are back on track. I've got some things coming up to hopefully sort out some of these things, but I'll keep you updated with all that in perhaps in real time as I'm going through it. I'll tell you about it in these intros and outros, or maybe after it's all sorted. It's probably a bit definite, but after it's all come to some sort of conclusion in terms of this part of it, then maybe I'll reflect on it then. We'll see how we go. But yeah, apologies for the break, but we're now back. This week, starting off with a bang, we've got a brilliant guest. It's Louise McCulloch, who, if any of you watched the SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4, you'll know who she is. She was the first ever female winner of the show. And yeah, what a brilliant achievement to go on that the first year they allow women in and to complete it and to be the first female winner. And also just, it's a massive feat and a massive achievement for anyone to get through that. It's pretty rigorous stuff. I'm not quite sure I could do it. I'm pretty sure I couldn't. I can say that with some certainty. Although I do like to think I'm quite stubborn and can manage most things, I think that might be a bit past me. But yeah, it's a great episode. We talk all about that show. If you saw the show, you'll know that it just intrinsic with the programme, there was loads about mental health. Anyway, you know, I think mental health goes hand in hand with these kind of challenges and pushing yourself. It's not always about the physical aspect of it. Usually it's about proving something to yourself. And that all feeds into mental health. So it's all in there. It's all an episode where it comes kind of mental health weaves in and out. And that's just kind of what we talk about. The show, mental health, a little bit about Muay Thai, I think, because Louise trains at the Aberdeen Combat Centre as well, which is how I was able to approach her and ask her to do this interview. So it's all in there. So a big thanks to Louise. And after this tiny bit more of admin, you're going to get to hear that. But just a quick shout out, if this is your first ever Mood Swings episode, thanks for listening. And then just to let you all know, you can get me on social media at 365 Aberdeen on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram, which is probably the best place to go if you can only be bothered with one of them. It's Mood Swings Abs, that's ABZ. And you'll find all the links to past episodes. Just scroll through the feed. There'll be episodes that you've not seen that you might be interested in even. We don't have anyone who's been on SAS Who Dares Wins before, so it's not a direct link. But, you know, there's loads of people who do Muay Thai. There's Gail Porter, who's another TV personality. There's loads. Musicians. Just have a look yourself. I'm not going to list loads of names. And I think that's about it. Oh, I got t-shirts for sale. We've still got some in limited sizes and colours, but if you go on my Big Cartel, so 365aberdeen.bigcartel.com, you'll get them there. And we've got some dresses left too. Right, that's enough of that. Enjoy this episode. Cheers.
I feel a little bit better. Just reminded me when I was at school and everyone had to sit around on the floor around the school teacher. That's kind of how I felt a minute ago.
Making you anxious.
So I'm here with Louise I'm going to fuck us up. McCulloch?
Yep.
Is that right? Correct. Thank fuck. That's the first one. Who recently was the first winner from Aberdeen and the first female winner of SAS Who Dares Wins?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long ago did you actually film and do all that?
So it was all filmed end of September, beginning of October.
Okay. So it was quite recent in terms of how when it was filmed and when it went out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was edited. They got through editing really quickly.
Yeah, and just go straight. Do they tell you when it's going out, like before you do it or after you've completed it?
They kind of said roughly it would probably be the end of January time.
Okay.
So we didn't get any definite dates until like way later on.
And what was the process from the kind of first application?
And why did I apply?
Yeah, why did you apply?
I think, so I'll kind of give you a bit of background first off. So I'm an orthopaedic surgeon and about 5 years ago I got a consultant job, and the whole way through your training you always have like goals to achieve and
okay.
sort of exams to pass and jobs to get. So you always have something that you need, like a challenge, you know, mm-hmm. that you need to kind of get over before you can move on. And then as soon as you kind of become a consultant, you don't really have that, you know.
Yeah.
You've kind of got to really as high as you can get. There's other things that you can do, but it's not like you've kind of reached your ultimate goal, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really sit well with me. I kind of always like to challenge myself and try different things. And so that's kind of, I suppose, a little bit of the reason why I entered. But it's also a little bit of the reason why, like, all my fitness has totally changed in the last 3-4 years, probably.
Okay.
But going back to why I applied, it's a program that I've always watched with my husband, and I've always kind of thought, oh, you know, I could have a shot at that. And they've never let women in to do it, so I've never really thought, oh, that's like an achievable goal, you know. And then I saw it advertised, I think, just on Facebook in the summertime, like June, July time, that they were accepting women for the first time. So I was like, oh, might as well apply.
Yeah,
like, what's the worst that's going to happen? I'm not going to get into it. So I kind of didn't really feel that I would get in,
yeah.
you know, I didn't really, because most people who are on it have this horrendous sob story and some horrendous drama that they've got over, you know, and I don't really have that. I'm like fairly normal, I think. And then, so I just applied, and then that just went through the application process and eventually got in.
It was going to be my next question, was it one of those things, it's like almost anything like that, when you, and even if you enter a competition or anything like that, it's almost, it feels so remote, the chances of it happening, that when it actually does, you get the phone call or the email or whatever, it's quite a shock. Was it like that when you've heard you were...
Well, you see, so media people are completely different on a completely different time scale to everybody else. So like for me, if I'm taking holidays, I kind of have to give 6 weeks notice
yeah.
to cancel clinics and cancel theatre and stuff like that, you know. Media people just expect you to be able to like drop stuff at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So nobody would tell me if I was getting to go definitely or not. So that was really difficult because it got to the point where I was like, so the process went from like 5,000 people applied to about 750 people doing a fitness test and interviews. And then from those 750, it went to 40
okay.
who did like another exercise test and a kind of psychiatric medical report. So whenever it got to that 40, we were probably like 5 weeks away from whenever they were talking about going, I was like, right, I'm actually just going to have to take my holidays and just, if I don't get to go, I'll refill the stuff up, but
yeah.
I need to just like take them for just in case. So that's what I did, and that's how I managed to get away.
Oh, okay. So otherwise you wouldn't be able to go?
No, they would have just said, because, so 2 weeks before we left, they sent two sets of boots, like military boots, to wear in, and a 4-week training plan.
Okay.
With 2 weeks to go, so like that's how organised they were.
Yeah, it's all last minute.
Yeah, totally.
I know someone actually that applied for The Apprentice.
Oh really?
They got the like into the sort of interview stage, and it was similar. It was just kind of like you need to be in London, this office at 9:30.
Yeah.
And in a week or a week and a half time, I think it was. They were kind of like,
yeah,
I'm in Aberdeen, I work full time, I can't just drop everything.
Exactly.
So yeah, it must just be what you're saying. It must just be people in media, just, it's kind of like, well, our way or the highway, I suppose.
But I suppose a little bit of it is...
to see how committed you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of shows how committed you are as well, you know? And I think that's probably one of the things that I've learned from it, you know? That if you want to go and try and do something, you just go and do it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if people tell you that you can't, or you just have to try. What's the worst that's going to happen, you know?
Totally. And what was your reaction to when you knew 100% that you were going to be going and say, you know, your family and your friends' reaction?
So we weren't actually really allowed to tell anybody.
Okay.
I think probably didn't really think about it until whenever those boots arrived and that training plan arrived. I had a little kind of mini panic attack, I think. Just like, ah, oh, this is like getting real.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did you just like fly out? Was there any sort of process, you know, from when you leave Aberdeen, was there any process before you just go straight out to...
No, you just go, we got told that we had to be in Heathrow for like 4 o'clock on a Saturday, and you just had to be at Heathrow for 4 o'clock on Saturday. And we didn't know where we were going, didn't know, I kind of thought it was going to be cold, but I hadn't thought about altitude at all, otherwise I would have done some training for it.
Yeah, altitude training. Yeah, so they just fly you straight out and you're right into it.
So what happened was they flew us from Heathrow to Madrid, transferred from Madrid to Santiago, and then we got in on the Sunday morning, got a bus. So there were two groups of us. So there was one group had left earlier and they'd had to go through France over, okay. Or they'd had to go through Paris over to Santiago, and then that was like a group of eight, and then there was another group of like 17 of us who went my way.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of all arrived at the same time. So we all got on a bus and went to a hotel in Santiago. And then basically we were told we just had to go and change into our boots, and for a bit of light fizz, which was like a 2-hour beasting up a mammoth mountain.
Okay. Was that filmed? Was that the first sort of thing?
No, so that wasn't filmed. That was just like kind of meant to be acclimatization. And then we went back down and had a whole heap of kind of like production meetings and things just for like 3 or 4 hours. We weren't really meant to be speaking to each other or kind of like getting any personal information from anybody. But that didn't really happen.
Yeah, that must be quite difficult.
So one of the girls I was chatting to going through the departures at the airport, and she goes, "Oh, right, so what age are you?" And I was like, 40. And she's like, "Oh dear." I was like, "Oh man."
What a comment.
I was like, "I'm not looking forward to this now."
So, how was it when it first started? Obviously, you said you got a bit of acclimatization, but I can imagine not nearly enough.
Yeah.
When it all kicked off and the cameras were rolling, how was there a sort of settling in period where you felt like, not this is easy, but this is, you know, you've got that, the adrenaline's pumping and you're raring to go and it's sort of enjoyable and you're coasting through it for the little first bit, or was it just hell as soon as it sort of started?
So I enjoyed all of it. Loved it. I would go back in a flash. I wouldn't say there was any bit of it that I didn't... that's not true. There's probably lots of it that I didn't particularly enjoy, but I loved it. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I just loved it. It was brilliant. It was just such an experience, you know? And but what happened was we were... The following morning, on the Monday morning, we were meant to be kind of... We got told we were doing kind of like... some more sort of acclimatization, and there were cameras, but we were kind of told that they were doing like a making of sort of thing.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, we probably should have just gone, okay, so this is going to start now. But I didn't really think about it like that. And I was sitting right. We got transferred into this old rickety bus, that you see at the very start. mm-hmm. when it's coming down, and then they come and like kind of attack us with flash bombs and lots of banging and stuff. And then we do a nice little 5k sprint down a hill, and then that's it started. But everybody's like, oh, well, what about whenever there was downtime and the cameras weren't on? And but that never happened, you know. It just genuinely didn't happen, because whenever you were on location, there were maybe times when the cameras weren't about and we were just like waiting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was once whenever we were running down to do that jump off the bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
With the trust thing, and we were obviously earlier, or the production guys weren't ready, or they weren't set up fully. So we were running down the hill, and Ant was taking us, and we had like a little kind of like 5 minutes, and he was just had a chat to us, you know, was just like telling us about sort of a bit full of mindfulness, really, sort of taking stock and enjoying what we're doing, and just appreciate what's around us, and mm-hmm. appreciate like the scenery and just the magic of it, you know.
Yeah. That was going to be one of my other questions, was that?
Sorry.
No. Just about the Ant and the rest of the guys who were there. Although they are very, you know, intimidating, and part of their job is to be intimidating and, of course, quite rigorous. I think especially towards the end as well, there was a real sort of heart about them. Does that make sense? They seemed like when you got to a certain stage, they kind of were letting you know that they were impressed, and they
were kind of backing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was something I didn't expect. This was the first time I'd watched the series.
What did you think of it?
I really enjoyed it, but that was one part I didn't expect, was in the later sort of part of it, or even really throughout. It definitely felt like deep down they had your back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's one of the things that really surprised me as well, is that they're really, really insightful. They're really good, and that's in a positive and a negative way as well, because they're really insightful and they can use that to their advantage to totally try to break you down. And that's what they did, one of the things that they did to me. They kind of identify this what you perceive as your strengths and the kind of strengths of character you hold dear to you.
Yeah.
And they use that against you. But then at the same time, they also identified in me that for the first maybe 3 or 4 days that I was there, I was completely still in work mode. I'd gone in, was treating it like a job, just had to go in and do it. I wasn't there to make friends or influence people, you know, I was just there to do a job. And they completely identified that and were just like, yeah, you just need to kind of chill out a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm genuinely, they're all my absolute heroes. Like the things that they've gone through, the things that they've seen, and to provide people with the opportunity to go and do that is just amazing, you know. So whenever part of your process of going through it all, and before your application process, you get seen, or you get you see a psychiatrist. Well, I saw a psychiatrist, and she does like a medical report, really.
Yeah.
And that's not like to stop you going on the program, but it's just to identify if there's any issues, or that they can kind of keep an eye on, you know, whenever you're there. And she was like, so, because we had a fairly in-depth conversation about the professionalism of it, and if there was any potential for it to have a negative impact on my patients or on my career, you know. Because at the end of the day, she said, look, it's a reality show. And I'm like, I wouldn't even really have considered it a reality show, you know. I was like, oh, maybe I really shouldn't be doing this, you know. So, and she was like, well, surely there's other ways that you can kind of do something similar that's not the same. And I'm like, yeah, but you're never going to have this opportunity to do like all that stuff
that we did,
you know. Like, never going to have that opportunity again. So it's honestly, it was just such a privilege to get to do it.
Was that conversation sort of to protect you and your professional life in terms of going back to like day-to-day
life? It was more sort of like, I think it was more focused around one of my concerns after I did it was that obviously I knew how well I'd done, and it's probably one of the first things that I've ever done that I've been genuinely proud of myself for, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that it's really, I think a lot of it, my worry was that you don't have any control over the edit, you know.
Okay.
They can make you look however mm-hmm. they want you to look. So like in week three, they kind of perceived me in a bit of a negative light.
Yeah.
And like, don't get me wrong, they could have been worse. They could have been worse a million times over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that was my concern, was how they could portray me, really.
Yeah.
And whether they would have my back.
I think it's just part of like, they have to have a narrative throughout it.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
To appeal to the people watching. I suppose it could, like, if it was just, here's these people, these are the tasks, they've done well, they've
oh, yeah.
done not done so good.
No,
it's
I
not
going
to have that that appeal. But I did find it like interesting throughout the viewer. As I said, this was the first time I watched it, so I got quite a fresh perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, the other thing that surprised me about it was how much they, I don't know if it's just in the current climate that we're in now in terms of like talking about mental health, but throughout the show, I don't know whether this has been on previous seasons or whether, as I say, the highlight of it now is the climate sort of changing.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of focus on mental health.
Absolutely.
With you guys, whilst you're going through the show, on both like what certain people on it had been through before.
Yeah.
Were you prepared for that going in? Was that something you expected them to?
Well, that's kind of one of the reasons why I didn't think I would get in it, because I don't really, like, all of the, a lot of people who went on it and who were in it have had, they have a story, you know.
Yeah.
They have some horrendous thing that's happened to them in the past, like Milo's brother or Mark's wife, you know.
Yeah.
Like, all these things that are like really, really traumatic events, and I don't really have that. I maybe have like lots of little traumatic events, to, like, but I don't have anything like that. And then I think it's a bit of a difficult situation as well for some of the guys who, Nathaniel, who I'm not entirely sure how much the production crew knew of all of that before he went in. So I think that's a really difficult situation as well, and that was really emotional. Whenever he wrote us a letter after he'd left,
was the guy that was discharged? They discharged him because they were worried about his
yeah.
his mentality on the show.
Yeah.
Was that something you felt like was appropriate? Were you kind of gutted for him that he was discharged, or did you think that was right being in the process with him?
I think it's difficult for us to say, because we didn't know any of that before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a decision that they had, that the medical staff had to make, knowing his background and having spoken to him. So
what was it like, from what I could see of the edit, there was cameras on you pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
So even though you're going through all these like kind of physical tasks and all the attitude and everything else, were you still aware the whole time that you were being filmed, or was it quite easy to switch off from that?
You're so exhausted, you kind of forget about it, you know? Like, in the camp, there's cameras everywhere. Like, if there was one camera in our accommodation block, there must have been, like, maybe 20.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, in one building. Plus all of the stuff that's outside, you're just filmed all the time, you know? So you just kind of... you kind of just forget about
switch
it, to be honest. And then, because the only time there's like, if we're on the camp, there's no guys running around with, there's no cameramen running around.
Okay, it's just the cameras that are set up.
Yeah, it's just the cameras that are set up. Whenever you went on location and did like, tasks and stuff, they were kind of running around, but not whenever you were in camp. And we were mic'd up all the time,
mm-hmm.
even at night.
I'm sure that's brilliant. I'm sure they've got some edits to hold them back. They just send clips of you snoring through.
I'm very confident there's not many clips of anybody snoring.
I suppose.
But like, one of the worst things whenever I was there was I had one night terror, I think. And it was whenever we were down to kind of like, must have been the final 8 or 10. And it was after we'd done the buddying up thing, because I was right up at the corner of the accommodation,
mm-hmm.
and I must have just woken up and was in absolute blind panic, because I thought everybody else had left me. I thought like there was nobody sleeping. I thought everybody else had like buggered off onto the parade square and just left me. And I genuinely woke up absolutely screaming.
I'm sure they were grateful.
I know.
Do you have, if you had night terrors before you went into the camp, or was that the first one?
That's the first night terror I've ever had, first and only, I think.
Or do you?
I think I maybe had a few whenever I got out first up, but yeah.
Yeah. So was that, do you think that was induced by the stress of...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just when you first said it there, you said that I had a night terror, quite blasé, and kind of thought, oh, it's maybe something you've had back home, but...
I had them, I had a couple probably... that one, and then a couple when I came home first up, but after that it's all been fine.
No, well, at least I've stopped, I suppose.
I know, exactly.
What was your favourite task that you did? Well, I suppose favourites maybe I always term. What was the one maybe you felt you'd achieved most, or just, you know what I mean, generally felt the best?
I probably got something out of all of them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But simply just in doing them. Before I went away, I wouldn't really have said that I was particularly scared or about anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Heights wouldn't be up there as one of my favourite things, but I wouldn't have said, oh, I'm scared of heights, but I don't like heights at all. So I suppose one of the things, you know that ladder, ladder over the 200 metre drop? I'm quite proud of that.
Yeah.
Considering I had to do it twice.
Yeah, that was the one I kind of thought when I saw it. I was just, it looks almost like you look at it and you're like, maybe it'd be easy. But then also you think the first time you stepped on it and it probably moves or it shakes.
Do you know what the hardest thing is? And it's probably just because I wasn't relaxed in doing it. But do you know the ropes that you were holding onto and you kind of had to lean forward onto them? I was like hauling so hard onto the ropes, my hands, like I had a burn in my hand, and then I had to go back and do it again, and by the time I got to the other side I was like, my arms are broken. If you asked me to do a press, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
What a nightmare. What was it like when you got to the final stages and you knew you were really close but knew you still had to go through the kind of, that, what was that last 24 hours? What did they call it again? I can't.
Oh, interrogation, torture,
yeah,
interrogation.
Was there something was it like you knew you were that close that you were just gonna have to write out and force yourself to the end, or were you still kind of in that, this is kind of doubt stage?
So, I never really had a stage of doubting myself in that I knew I would never VW. I would never hand my badge in. If they wanted me to be out of it, then they were going to have to kick me out.
Yeah.
What I was saying before about them kind of identifying the strengths you kind of hold, precious, you know. They didn't really show it on the TV, but in real life, what happened whenever the mole got identified,
mm-hmm.
and Ant's standing on top of the platform, and he says, Ant says, so who could you not work with and why? And she says, and what Petra says is, number 20, selfish and not a team player, number 4, selfish and not a team player, and number 24, selfish and not a team player. And like I say, those are actually the two probable characteristics that I do hold precious, you know.
Yeah.
I don't, everything I do at work is as part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything. I don't do anything individually, mm-hmm. you know. So yeah, that was tough. And that's just totally playing with your head, I think. I think in my mind, they kind of identified that I was pretty strong and physically kind of up there, and mentally was probably fairly resilient, so they kind of had to use something to try and break me, really.
Yeah. I think that's part of it, though, in terms of what they do in their training anyway. So
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what... Yeah, that's why it was most... I don't know if I want to use the word fun, but that's how they get...
They're fun to watch.
That's how they get to kind of...
How they get their kicks.
Yeah, they just kind of went, all right, that person.
I'll tell you, the other way that they get their kicks is that, you know, Foxy. every time he came into our accommodation, he would have like this amazing aftershave on. Like, honestly, we were stinking by the, like, after 3 or 4 days, we were stinking. We didn't have any change of underwear, we didn't have a shower, we didn't have, like, we didn't have anything. And every time he came in, he would just like smell amazing, like just fresh out of the shower, like loads of aftershave. And he did it on purpose, because one of his, whenever he was doing his training, one of his DSs did it to him and he hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's mad.
Because, do you want to know, it just makes you feel incredibly dirty, you know?
Yeah,
it,
totally.
Like, because you know that you're stinking. You can't do anything about it. So...
That's crazy. That's shocked me that they go to that sort of I smell good, so they feel worse about smelling bad. Like, did you get a peek at their accommodation? No.
Nah, but so I bet it was nicer than ours.
Yeah, I can imagine. I read in your interview in the Evening Express that one of the worst parts about it was obviously they can interrupt your sleep or whatever at any time, and that that was really draining. And just like, was that possibly the worst bit, just the constant stress of you can never, I mean, it's like, I don't know, if you have a long day at work or whatever, it's that horrible feeling of being at work and not being able to unwind, but you get to go home.
Yeah.
Wasn't that kind of being on 24/7?
So it's a little bit like being on call. So whenever we're on call, we'll do like 24-hour on call, and you're just like waiting for a phone call all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of that magnified, or multiplied, if you know what I mean,
yeah.
Just because it's continuous. You don't have, like, normally once you've done your on-call, you can kind of, like, chill out, relax, have a glass of wine, and have a proper night's sleep the next
yeah,
day,
yeah.
You know? But this was, like, 11 days of continuously being on-call. So, yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, I can imagine. How often were they coming in and just, like,
so
waking you up?
Pretty much every night. We either had to do... They either came in, woke us up once or twice every night, or... we would have to go and do kind of guard duty.
Mm-hmm.
So you would go and do guard duty, and you might have to do that twice. As less people were in it, you would have to go and do that twice a night.
And how long were the stints of guard duty?
Either half an hour or 1 hour.
Okay. And you just got to, was that tough to like stay awake and?
You were always there with, there was always somebody
okay,
else there,
okay.
You know. So you could kind of chat away, but yeah, it was tough.
Yeah. Freezing.
Yeah, cold and fairly miserable and yeah.
Not ideal.
No.
So after you'd done the interrogation and stuff and knew you passed, this is the fun bit to talk about now. How did you feel? Like, was it kind of surreal? Couldn't quite believe it, or just overjoyed that it was over?
So did you watch the programme kind of was like the two, like Mark and Milo falling to pieces and emotional wrecks and crying and everything.
Yeah.
I'm standing there like, okay, can we do that again?
Yeah.
But I think I was a little disappointed because at the very start of that process, do you know the big umpire guy?
I think so.
Yeah, so the umpire guy stands in front of you once you're... You get taken in your interrogation bit, you get punted into the back of your van, and then you get brought back up to where your camp is. And then they have, you're all like dressed up, you're all still in your kit, you've still got your burger on your back, and you start off in those dress positions. And I was the last person, I think, to be moved out of the stress positions and gone through into like the sort of lighter interrogation stuff, so I was
yeah.
the last person to see the umpire. So the umpire is this big tall guy, he stands in front of you and he says, I am the umpire, if you want this process to finish or to end, just put up your hand and ask to speak to the umpire. And he says the next time that, and then he goes who am I, and you say you're the umpire, and he says the next time you see me will be the end of this process. And then from behind him, Sandeep comes out, the doctor guy,
mm-hmm.
and Sandeep goes, who are you? He just goes, I am Sandeep, do you know who I am? And you go, yeah, you're Sandeep. Or he says, do you recognize me? And Sandeep just goes, are you fit to continue with this process? And I'm like, yeah, but I wear contact lenses, so I did the whole escape and evasion thing I'd done with half an eye because I've lost a contact lens. And I was like, yeah, Sandeep, I'm good to go, but you're going to have to take this contact lens out of this eye and put my glasses on because I actually can see nothing. And he's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. So I was like, right, just take my gloves off. You don't even, like, don't untie me. Just need to take my gloves off so I can take my contact lens out and then chuck me my glasses out of my Bergen. And he did that. So that's how I ended up with my glasses for the last section. Yeah, so at the end of it, I was so disappointed to see Ant and that it wasn't the umpire. I was like, so does that mean it's finished then?
Oh, so you didn't get to see the umpire again?
No. So I was like, does that mean it's done?
Where'd he gone? For a pint or something?
Probably. He'd like given up.
That's my next question was going to be, once you'd passed and you got out of there, was there some sort of big reception?
Nah.
That's disappointing. I know. I was hoping you'd be the biggest party ever.
Sorry. So by the time I got out of it, what happened? It must have been about like half 8. It was by the time I left the camp bit, and you have to go and see the psychologist. And the psychologist does like a little. She talks to you for half an hour and just makes sure that you're okay, and that you get food, and. Then, because the three of us finished, all three of us went down and just got on the little bus down to, they had like an Airbnb that had the final 8 people all went home together.
Okay.
And the final eight people all went home together. So we were all in, they were all in this cottage with two of the production team. And they were all like sitting around this camp by the time the three of us got back, they were all like sitting around this campfire eating crisps and chocolate, and so we had a wee bit of a kind of party for a couple of hours, and then I was like, yeah, I need to go to my bed.
Yeah.
And had the best shower ever.
Yeah, was that the first shower you got after?
Yeah first shower for 2 weeks. Yeah. And
I mean, I've been at festivals before, so I've done 4 days without a shower.
It's just minging.
Yeah.
And then we were up at like 5 o'clock or something the following morning for our flight home.
Okay. When you got back, was it quite surreal that it was all done and dusted and you knew it was all over?
Like back in the UK?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was quite lucky because we'd planned to be on holiday for the week after.
Okay.
So I flew into Heathrow and then had to go to a wedding, like a family wedding. And I did not look my best at this wedding at all. I looked horrendous, like totally skeletally thin and knackered and black and blue.
And at that stage, could you explain to anyone where you'd been? Or?
I told people where I'd been and what I'd done, but I didn't say like how I didn't tell anybody how well I'd done.
Yeah, were you allowed to say that? Or were they told? Yeah.
And then the only person I told was my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to this wedding, and then we flew to Morocco the next day, and I slept for 4 days. Solidly slept and ate.
Okay, so no big challenges in Morocco.
No, my biggest challenge was getting off my sun lounger.
So yeah, I read as well, and because you did a couple of interviews and stuff previously, so I read as well that now being back, you kind of, you're still every so often get the urge to kind of be back out there.
I would go back in a flash.
Yeah.
I would go back in a heartbeat. I loved it.
Are you going to be contacting Ant to see if they could do some sort of, you know, when they do on these reality shows, where they bring back all the winners and have them like face off again?
Oh man, I'd love it. You could suggest that to him.
Yeah, he's coming to Aberdeen.
So Ant's coming to Aberdeen, I think, on the 19th of April, and Mark Billingham's coming up on the 1st of May.
Are you looking forward to, will you see them while they're here rather than just the show? Will you
I'm going to the show for both of them, and hopefully I'll catch them. I don't know. It depends on what their schedules are like and stuff.
Have you had much contact with those guys or any other contestants that you?
So the other contestants, we kind of catch up every couple, 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
I didn't make their last catch up, but we were down in Snowdon with Ollie. So there was maybe about 15 or 16 of us that climbed Snowdon, and that included some of the guys from the previous series.
Oh, okay, cool. What are those like? Are they set up by the production team to kind of get you back together?
No, just arranged it ourselves. Ollie's got a company called Breakpoint, which kind of run sort of similar, sort of like they just had a weekend just there, which was sort of essentially something like the program where they just do 36 solid hours. They do a bit like the Beast Ends and the chat, and then they do the torture and interrogation for a bit and stuff.
Okay.
So yeah.
Like the worst stag do ever, sort of thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Instead of going to the pub, we're taking you to this break point.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I won't be suggesting that to anyone from myself or for anyone I know. We won't be doing that. So we're in Aberdeen Combat Centre as well. One of the challenges on the show was the boxing. Were you rubbing your hands together thinking, I've got this, given the training you've done?
I wouldn't really say that I was rubbing my hands together thinking I've got this. But it was certainly one of the more enjoyable tasks. I just felt bad for Vicky. We got put together.
Yeah.
Some of the guys picked each other, and like Louise picked Nathaniel. Which was all a bit controversial when it went on TV, but at the time it wasn't really. It was because we were all completely treated as equals. There was no whole gender bias.
Yeah.
We were just all completely treated as equals, so for us it wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
You know.
What's next for you? Do you know, is there any other challenges that you want to personally, or is that you for the next wee while?
No, I'll get another challenge. I just don't know what it's going to be yet. I think it'll certainly be difficult to top it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether it's just what I can do. Don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
If anybody's got any challenges they want completed, feel free to shout.
And I know I saw on like social media and stuff that you went down and did a BBC radio interview.
Mm-hmm.
How was it doing stuff like that? Is that kind of
horrendous?
Something
it's awful.
Yeah.
It's good fun for a change, but it's completely out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did another one back in Northern Ireland yesterday, and we did an assault course on the Tuesday, and I love that.
Yeah.
but I'm not patient enough for TV like that, where you have to like retake stuff, and then did an interview last night.
Is it just kind of surreal? Is it something?
It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really feel like, I feel like a bit of a fraud, you know? I feel like, I've just been on TV, like, you know, I don't really feel like I've done anything special. Does that make sense?
Kind of, but I think if I'd done all that, I'd probably be singing from the rafters about it.
Yeah. I don't really know. I think that like all eight of us who got into the final mm-hmm. torture interrogation, all should be immensely proud of ourselves. And don't get me wrong, I'm incredibly proud of everything that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of the few things that I've taken time to kind of reflect and be proud of myself for. But it's just, I don't know. I just kind of feel like a bit of a fraud.
I definitely don't think you could class yourself as a fraud. Like, I don't know. I suppose it is sometimes. I've obviously not done anything on the same level that you've done in terms of like that. But sometimes when you, sometimes I think some people, and I include myself, this it's hard to take kind of compliments. You know what I mean? Or hard to, for me, if someone compliments me, I find that really like. Not difficult, I'd be a bit, but it's kind of just like, well, it's just like.
You're just a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, just that sort of draw. I've just done it. Is that kind of what you mean? You feel like.
Probably a little bit.
Don't see what all the fuss is about.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I think maybe a bit of it was because I did it for myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I did it because I wanted the challenge. I wanted to see how far I could go. I think one of my anxieties was that I wouldn't be fit enough for it, you know, because like I'm 40 and you're up against like 19-year-old guys. So I did it for myself. I did it to not to prove anything to myself necessarily, but just to see. and to see how mentally and physically resilient I am, mm-hmm. and how physically fit I am compared to other people. So I kind of achieved that. So in my head, I've kind of like, I'm kind of past that now.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was good whenever it came on TV because I could start to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it's actually really difficult to not speak about it, you know? But yeah, I'm proud of myself. I just need a new challenge now.
Don't know. It should just mean you put you on more reality TV. Seems like the most difficult part. Big Brother maybe next?
No. I think I would last like 30 seconds on something like that.
Yeah. But that could be, that's my take from this from our chat, is that the physical stuff you seem to have nails, so they just need to put you in.
It's a horrendous mental torture.
Is there anything else about the process or anything you want I've not covered that you want to talk about?
Not really. I think probably one of the things that I kind of want to kind of communicate, I suppose, or if I get the opportunity to speak about, is just like how you move out of your comfort zone and mm-hmm. how you learn about yourself and how you can develop mental resilience, you know, and how important that is, and how important it is to have a team of people around you who support you and push you in the right direction. Because if you've got people who don't push you and don't support you, then they're not necessarily acting in your favour, you know?
Yeah.
You need people who are happy to push you out of your comfort zone. Because out of your comfort zone is definitely when magic happens. It can be uncomfortable, but that's when you learn all about yourself.
Yeah. And did you feel like, when you speak about the people around you, do you mean the people on the show, or do you mean just kind of people in your own life?
Just in general.
Yeah.
So, I have got the best team of people around me. I've got the most supportive husband who looks after me and just supports everything that I do. Whenever we were on the programme, I had an amazing team of people around me, recruits exactly the same as me, exactly the same motivation and just wanting to see a challenge through. And, you know, that's what sees you through, you know. Whenever you've got people, whenever you are so physically exhausted that it's a struggle to keep going, and you know one of the things that gets you through is that every other person is feeling exactly the same, you know.
Yeah.
And whenever you're in that situation, it's amazing what your body can do. Like, amazing, honestly. You genuinely wake up in the morning and you think, I can't put one foot in front of the other. And then they ask you to do something and you just like pull it out of the bag, you know?
Yeah, just force
and
yourself.
I've got like so many patients. I've got so many cancer patients who are just so resilient, you know? Mm-hmm. They get everything thrown at them, just one disaster after another, and they just like bounce back. It's people are just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Did you look back at those experiences that you've had through work whilst you're on the show and whilst you go to, did you find like strength in that, that, you know, you knew people that you say your patients have overcome these hardships?
I think they were always in the back of my mind. Before I left, one of my friends in Dundee kind of does stuff with the Marine Reserves, mm-hmm. and one of the things he said to me just before I left, he messaged me and he just goes, just never ever fucking ever give up. And if you get a second, enjoy it. And do you want to know that, like, that's what got me through a lot of it. It got me through a lot of the interrogation, just got me through a lot of it. Just never give up.
The best advice, was it?
Absolutely.
What was the, you mentioned mental resilience there. It's one of the things you want to highlight as being really important. What was it that you, or that you do, or that you did to build up that mental resilience?
So I think probably everything that I've done, and every sort of challenge that you set for yourself, and whether you achieve it or not, that's that's what gives that mental resilience, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I suppose you kind of think about it as bounce back ability, you know.
Yeah.
If you have a challenge, and even if you don't achieve it, you still learn something about yourself, and you become a tougher person for it. Mm-hmm. And it's using that strength that you have to know that you can do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like genuinely amazing what your mind can make you do, positively and negatively.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
So, and it's just kind of striving to take the positive and make it work positively for you every day. If you can wake up every morning and just try to be your positively best, most awesome person that day, then you can't fail.
It's a good, lovely little message there.
You know?
Last question for you. What would you say to anyone else who was thinking about, maybe not necessarily SOS Who Dares Wins, but any sort of challenge like that, or any sort of challenge within their own life that they're unsure about pursuing?
Oh, I'm absolutely 100% go for it.
Yep.
Like 100% go for it. Because, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to feel. You don't learn anything by winning all the time. You have to feel or have a setback or have a challenge, and that's how you progress and become a stronger person. If you've got anything that you want to do, you need to just go for it.
Yes. Thanks so much, Louise, for speaking to me.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for speaking to me.
No worries. Cheers.
Well, that was the first episode back. I didn't even try and attempt to guess what number it is. I'll need to look that up myself. But thanks so much for having the time, for taking the time to listen and having a listen and taking a punt. Having and taking, I'm saying these words almost without meaning now. I don't know where that's come from. The next couple episodes are with previous guests. We've got a little group one with, well, one of the next one has Michael Dart, who is a previous guest, and my friend Tom Gilbert, who is not a previous guest, did a little bit of reflection on the show, and just next week's one will be a very humorous one, put it that way. Tom is an enigma of a human being. And he did not disappoint in terms of his strangeness and his sheer hilarity when we recorded this episode last week. It was basically the most fun I've had recording an episode, which wouldn't be accurate. It was just the most fun I've had in ages, was sitting down with those two guys. And that was followed up with a chat with Ewan Davidson, who was the first person I ever interviewed for the podcast. And those two episodes are linked in a way that will become clear to you next week. And also because they were both sort of reflective episodes in the past. But again, me and Ewan just talked a kind of, for the first half of the podcast, not so much about mental health, just about childhood and a couple other things, Limp Bizkit. So the next 2 weeks' episodes are kind of more laid back and lighthearted. And I definitely needed that recording experience, I think, to get me back on track and get me enjoying recording podcasts. That makes it sound like I've not been enjoying recording them, which isn't accurate. I absolutely love sitting down and speaking to everyone, and all these conversations have been absolutely brilliant, but the admin and the, you know, the other side of it can be a little bit arduous at times. And I suppose needed the episode with Louise too, and these two that are coming up, those three episodes happening in quick succession. I needed to see how much I enjoyed the actual talking and that side of it again, to give me a boost to go back out and start booking these episodes and getting these podcasts out, which needs to happen more often. So hopefully I'm back with you for that. Thanks so much for listening. Mood Swings Abs on Instagram, please. I post all sorts of nonsense that you can follow there. Muay Thai, vegetarian food, me dicking about, I'm drinking red wine, all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in following me, do that, and the podcast, please get me there. All right, thanks so much for listening. Cheers.